Like what? Fletch asked. The car. Want to buy it? I hate it. Fletch turned the key in the ignition. Listen to that. Muffler's no damn good. To the amazement of the used car dealer, Fletch put the Datsun in gear, roared off the lot into the street, and away. The for sale sign blew off the windshield and landed on the sidewalk, not far from the salesman's feet. Chapter 38. You're from the News Tribune? Stuart Childers looked young and neat in his business suit and necktie behind his wooden desk. He looked basically healthy, as well, except for bags of sleeplessness beneath his eyes. His teeth kept tearing at his lips. Yes, name of Fletcher. I take it you're not here to see me about insurance. No, I'm not. The doorman at your apartment house said you were here at your office. You may be the answer to a prayer. Stuart Childers took a .22 caliber revolver from the top drawer of his desk. He placed it in the center of the desk blotter in front of him. If I'm not arrested for murder by 5 o'clock today, I intend to blow my brains out. That's some threat. Fletch sat in a chair facing the desk. He quoted, "When the gods wish to punish us, they answer our prayers." The office was small but paneled with real wood. There was a Turkish rug on the floor. You want to find out who murdered Donald Haybeck, is that right? Childers asked. That's the job of the police and the courts, Fletch answered. The police? Childers scoffed. The courts! Oh, my God! I want the story, Fletch said. I'm a journalist. My own purpose is to understand Donald Haybeck as much as possible and why he was murdered. Have you gotten far? Yes, I've gotten some good background. Childers contemplated the handgun on his desk. I murdered Donald Haybeck. The hell you say? The police won't listen to me. You've confessed to everything that's gone down in this area in the last 2 months. I know, Childers said. That was a mistake. Fletch shrugged. We all make mistakes. Don't you think we have a need for punishment? Teeth tearing at his lips, Childers looked at Fletch for an answer, waited. If we are being punished for what wrong we did, at least we can live with ourselves, die with ourselves. He waved his fingers at the handgun. Just going bang is not the better way. Still, Fletch said nothing. What do you know of my brother's death? I know you were drunk when you confessed to the police. I know Haybeck kept you drugged during the trial. Yes, tranquilizers. Haybeck said he always gave them to his clients during a trial. I had no idea how strong they were. The trial went by in a blur like a fast-moving railroad train. Childers' teeth worried his lips. I murdered my brother. Fletch said, I expect you did. How is that forgivable? Again, he seemed to be asking Fletch a real question. Richard said he was going to blackmail me for money to keep up his wacky, careless life. Even if I was paying him, he couldn't be trusted to keep his mouth shut. His need to hurt me and my parents was too great. My mistake was that I was horrified at the threat of the college, the world, my parents learning that I had cheated, hired an instructor to write my honors thesis. I went to Richard's apartment. I didn't intend to kill him. We fought like a couple of shouting, screaming, crying, angry kids. Suddenly we were on his little balcony. Suddenly the expression on his face changed. He fell backwards. Fell. You confess very convincingly. I woke up on the other side of the trial. I was back living in my apartment, coming to work here every day. Everybody was telling me the incident was over, closed, that I had to get on with my life. How could I get on with my life? The so-called incident wasn't over. My parents knew I had cheated on my honors thesis. One son was dead, the other son had murdered him, and my parents knew it. I'd destroyed my parents' every dream, every reality. I might as well have killed them, too. From the way he was looking at him, Fletch knew another unanswerable question was coming. My parents did what they thought was best in hiring Haybeck and getting me off, but wouldn't they feel better in their hearts if their sole remaining son took responsibility for what he had done? Fletch said nothing. You asked for a story, Childers said. So you took to confessing. Yeah, I'd read enough about a crime to be able to go into the police and say I committed it. They had to listen at first. I'd make up evidence against myself. That was my mistake. The evidence wouldn't check out, so they wouldn't believe me at all. You sure you just didn't want to play a starring role in court again? Childers gave him the look of a starlet accused of being attractive. Some people get a kick out of that. Childer sighed and looked at the gun. Stuart, you can't be tried again for murdering your brother.
I know that, so I murdered Habeck.
Now the story gets a little hard to swallow.
Why?
Murdering your brother was a crime of passion. Two brothers very angry with each other, probably never having been able to talk well with each other. Finding each other tussling, hitting each other, all kinds of angers at each other since you were in diapers, welling up out of your eyes. And one of you got killed. That's very different from the fairly intellectualized crime of killing the person who had prevented you receiving punishment for the first crime.
Is it?
I suppose it is. He looked sharply at Fletch.
Frustration is frustration, though, isn't it? Once you've taken a life, it becomes easier to take another life.
That's a cliché. People who commit crimes of passion seldom do so again. The object of your rage was dead.
Couldn't I have transferred my rage from my brother to Habeck?
Keep trying, Stuart. You'll work it out.
Who says a person who commits a crime of passion, as you call it, isn't capable of committing an entirely different rational murder?
What's rational about your murdering Habeck? The son of a bitch got you off.
Yes, he got me off.
Leaning forward on his desk, Childer spoke forcefully.
And the son of a bitch knew I was guilty. He obstructed justice.
In your behalf, you're the one who's walking around free. Childer sat back.
I don't know that much about the law, but I'd call Donald Habeck an accessory to murder after the fact. Wouldn't that be about right? Think about it.
Fletch thought about it.
How many times was Donald Habeck an accessory to a crime after the fact?
Fletch said, before the fact, too, I suspect.
What?
Fletch remembered saying to Louise Habeck about her son Robert, shooting his father would accomplish two goals, wouldn't it? And her answering, splendidly. Okay, Stuart. If you shot Habeck because you wanted to be punished so much, how come you didn't stay there? How come you weren't found standing over him with the gun? Childer smiled.
Would you believe I had to pee?
No.
Go shoot someone and see what happens to your bladder.
Sitting behind his desk, Stuart Childers was then speaking as evenly as someone might be discussing a homeowner's fire and theft policy.
I did wait there. I had thought someone would hear the gun. I shot Habeck sort of far back in the lot where he parked. I shot him as he was getting out of the car. No one was around. The guard at the gate was talking to someone entering the parking lot. I could see him. I waited. I had to pee in the worst way. I mean, really bad. I didn't want to have to go through the whole arrest process, you know, having shit my pants. So I went into the lobby of the News Tribune and asked the guard there if I could use the men's room.
Why didn't you come out again? There were police, reporters, photographers, who would have been interested to actually see you at a scene of one of your crimes.
I felt sick, jittery.
That would have been understood. Stuart Childer said something Fletch didn't hear.
What?
I wanted a drink.
A few drinks before I gave myself up.
You wanted to get drunk before you confessed again, is that it? What did you supposedly want, Stuart?
I wanted to get control of myself. I went home, had a few drinks, a bath, a night's sleep. In the morning, I had breakfast. Then I went to the police station to confess.
Childer shrugged.
A gentlemanly routine, I suppose. I was brought up that way.
Fletch shook his head. Then he asked, how did you know Habeck was going to be in the parking lot at the News Tribune a few minutes before 10 on Monday morning?
I didn't. Murdering Habeck was something I decided over the weekend. So Monday morning, I drove to his house. Got there about 7:30. Waited for him. He drove out of his garage in a blue Cadillac Seville. I followed him. He drove to the News Tribune. While he talked to the guard at the gate, I parked outside and walked in. It was the first stop he made. When he opened his car door, I shot him.
Then you had the irresistible need to pee.
I'd been sitting in my car since before 7 o'clock. Then after I peed, I felt really sick in the stomach. My legs were shaking. I had a terrible neck ache.
Childers rubbed the back of his neck.
I wanted time. Isn't that understandable?
I don't know. You say you wanted to get caught, but you ran away. There's no evidence at all that you were at the scene of the crime. Everything you've told me so far, that Habeck drove a blue Cadillac Seville, that he was shot at the back of the lot getting out of his car, all that was reported in the press.
Sorry if my story conforms to the truth.
You didn't confess until after you'd been able to read the details of the crime in the newspaper. Childers stared at the gun on his desk.
Okay, Stuart. What did you do with the murder weapon?
You know what?
What?
I don't know.
You don't know what you did with the gun?
I don't know. When I got home, I didn't have the gun. I've tried to remember. I was upset.
You had to pee.
Tried to reconstruct.
I bet.
I couldn't have had the gun in my hand when I walked into the lobby of the News Tribune. I must have thrown it into the bushes.
Fletch watched him carefully. You threw it into the bushes in front of the building?
I must have.
What kind of a gun was it?
A .22 caliber target pistol.
Stuart, your .22 caliber target pistol is on your desk in front of you.
I bought that last night. The one I used on Haybeck I've had for years. My father gave it to me on my 16th birthday.
Childers grinned.
He never gave Richard a gun.
Oh, my God.
What?
Fletch stood up.
Childers said, why didn't the police find the gun?
Fletch said, why didn't you find the gun?
I tried to. I went back to look for it. It wasn't there.
Fletch nodded to the gun on the desk.
May I take that?
Childers put his hand over it.
Not unless you want to get shot trying.
Oh, no, Fletch said. That would just put you to the bother of confessing again. Chapter 39. Hello? Hello?
Fletch heard his car phone buzzing while he was unlocking the door. This is the News Tribune resource desk. Name and code, please.
Oh, hi, Mary.
This is Pilar. Code, please.
1790-9.
Mr. Fletcher, you're wanted at a meeting in Frank Jaffe's office with Biff Wilson at 3 o'clock.
Oh, that's what's happening.
That's what's happening.
The dashboard clock said 2:20. Doubt I can make it, Pilar said.
The rest of the message from Mr. Jaffe is either be in my office at 3 o'clock for this meeting or don't bother coming back to the News Tribune, period.
Life does offer its choices.
So does the News Tribune. Any last words?
Yeah, Fletch said, and that was all he wrote.
Glancing time and again at the clock on his dashboard, Fletch sat in the parked car and thought for as much time as he had. When it became too late to make the News Tribune reasonably by 3 o'clock, he started the car. Slowly, he pulled into traffic and headed toward his apartment.
Alston, I know you haven't had the time.
Sure, I've had the time, old buddy.
Fletch's car was slouching down the boulevard slow lane toward home.
As soon as I announced my resignation from Haybeck, Harrison, and Holler this morning, a woman came by and took all the folders from my desk. Even the case I was working on. What do you think of that?
Oh, yeah, you resigned. Tell me about that.
I didn't become a lawyer to become a crook. I don't think they'd mind right now if I went home and only came in on Friday to pick up my final paycheck. Maybe I will. Want to meet at Manilow's for a beer?
Alston, I don't think there's going to be anybody at my wedding on Saturday who is employed.
Don't tell the caterer. By the way, old buddy, wedding present from your best man will be forthcoming, never fear, but obviously a bit late.
Aren't I supposed to give you a present for being best man or something?
Are you?
That will be late, too.
As long as the wedding comes off on time and it's a rollicking affair.
Yeah.
Fletch stopped the car to let a pigeon investigate a cigar butt in the road.
Rollicking.
So, for the last hour or so, using the considerable resources of Haybeck, Harrison, and Holler, I've been working for you.
Don't worry, you can't afford it.
That's the truth.
About those companies you asked me to look into, are you ready?
Yeah.
Lingman Toys and Kungwell Screw seem to exist for the sole purpose of each owning half of Wood Nymph Incorporated. In turn, Lingman Toys and Kungwell Screw are owned by one corporate body called Paraska Steamship Company. All this is a typical structuring of corporations designed to discourage curiosity and conceal interests. The purpose of all these corporations seems to be none other than owning a single business called the Ben Franklin Friends Service, essentially a whorehouse situated at... A woman in chartreuse shorts, halter, and high-heeled shoes was walking a poodle on a leash along the sidewalk. The gray of the woman's hair matched the poodle's. The woman's shorts were cut halfway up her ass cheeks. Alston was reciting the names of the officers of the various corporations. Names kept being repeated. Jay Demarest, Yvonne Heller, Marta Holsom, Marietta Ramsin. The woman and the dog turned into a passport photo shop.
Austin, okay, stop. Who the hell owns Pereska Steamship or whatever it is? Four women. Austin then began to repeat, recite a mishmash of names. Fletch stopped at an orange traffic light. The car behind him honked. Say what? Say again? A police car drew alongside Fletch. The cop studied Fletch's features carefully. Austin repeated the names. Bye, Austin. He dropped the phone in his lap. Fletch stomped on the accelerator. He went through the red light, made a U-turn in the middle of the intersection, and went through the red light again. The police car pursuing him did the same thing. Lieutenant Francisco Gomez, please, emergency. It certainly was an emergency. There were now two police cars pursuing him through city streets. His trying to outdrive them while talking on the car telephone clearly was a traffic hazard. Who's calling? Fletch hesitated, not at all. Biff Wilson. He put on his left directional signal and turned right from the left lane. Not a good enough trick to throw off his pursuers, but it did cause noisy confusion at that intersection. Yeah? Gomez sounded as if he were in the middle of a conversation instead of beginning one. Gomez, Biff Wilson's in trouble. Who is this? Fletcher, a.k.a. Alexander Lidicote, remember us? Shit, where are you? Hell, don't you know? Fletch spun his wheel mid-block and scurried down an alley. I thought the police were the eyes and ears of the city. What are you talking about? What's all that noise I hear? Sirens, screeching tires. Yeah, thanks for the police escort. I am in a hurry. Have you got the forensics report on that gun yet? What gun? The gun I gave you, the gun I told you about. Who cares about that, kid trying to make a name for himself? You haven't even looked into it? You're as bad as Charles, what's his name, Childers, Stuart Childers, want to play cops and robbers. You want to be the cop, he wants to be the robber. The ballistics report ought to be ready by now, too. Fletch had a moment of comparative peace as he went wrong way up a one-way street. I've got a warrant out for you, Fletcher. Possession of a seller's quantity of angel dust. I've got the evidence right here on my desk. I look forward to seeing it. Three police cars spotted Fletch at the corner. They accelerated after him. Aren't you hearing me, Gomez? Your pal Biff is in trouble. Yeah? At the newspaper. He's in Frank Jaffe's office. On the carpet, you might say, in danger of losing his job. No way. You know it's possible. Gomez said nothing. Fletch turned on his lights and pulled into the middle of a funeral cortege. Demonstrating little respect, the three police cars screamed by the cortege. He needs your help, Fletch said. He needs the ballistics and forensics report on that gun immediately. Yeah? Would I lie to you? What is this? Fletch turned off his lights and ducked down a side street. As soon as you've got the reports, call the News Tribune. Ask for Frank Jaffe's office. Biff's in Frank's office. Two blocks up from the next corner, a police car hesitated in the middle of the intersection. As soon as the police saw Fletch's car, they turned and came after him, lights flashing, sirens screaming. Gomez, you want to see Biff out on his rear? The line went dead. Fletch dropped the phone in his lap again. He could see the roof of the News Tribune building. The three police cars were in back in V formation pursuing him. There were only two more corners to skitter around. Chapter 40, the last chapter.
Hey, you can't leave your car there.
The guard in the lobby of the News Tribune was known to get red-faced easily. Fletch had left his car half on the sidewalk at the front door of the News Tribune. Fletch was on the rising escalator to the city room. What? He asked. At the bottom of the escalator, the guard looked toward the front door.
What are all those sirens?
I can't hear you, Fletch said. Too many sirens. He passed Morton Rickmers, the book editor, in the city room.
Did you see Tom Farley? Morton asked. Is he worth an interview?
Nah, Fletch answered. He's a little blue-haired old lady in green tennis shoes. Morton wrinkled his eyebrows.
Okay.
Through the glass door of Frank's office, Fletch saw Frank, behind the desk, and Biff Wilson in a side chair. The color of their faces was compatible with the color of the face of the guard downstairs, now doubtlessly talking to six policemen. Frank's secretary said, "You're late." "It's all relative," he breezed by her. Fletch closed Frank's office door behind him. "Good afternoon, Frank. Good of you to ask me to stop by."
Frank's watery eyes took in Fletch's t-shirt, jeans, and holey sneakers. "Good afternoon, Biff." Biff's jaw tightened. He looked away. His right ear was swollen and red. Fletch commiserated. "That looks like a real ouch." Biff's face was splotched with little cuts from having glass thrown in it. "Lucky for you, none of the glass from that beer bottle got in your eyes." Biff looked at Fletch wondrously. Fletch said to Frank, "That's nothing. You should see the News Tribune car Biff drives. Big dents, rear window smashed. Doubt you'll be able to get much for it on the used car market."
"How the hell do you know about it?" Biff demanded.
"I'm a reporter." Fletch sat in a chair. "Well, Frank, I'm glad to report that Mrs. Donald Haybeck does not slip vodka into her tea. In fact, the poor thing doesn't get to have any tea at all. I've learned my lesson in humility. Never go out on a story with preconceptions, right, Biff?" Frank said to him, "I'm surprised you showed up." "Frank," Fletch said, "in a moment your phone is going to ring. It will be Police Lieutenant Francisco Gomez calling Biff. He knows Biff is in your office. I would like you to take the message for Biff, please."
"Jeez!" In his chair, Biff threw one leg over the knee of his other leg. "Now the wise ass is telling you what to do."
Through the windows of Frank's office, Fletch saw six uniformed policemen milling around the city room.
"What's going on between you two guys?"
Although high in color, Frank was trying to sound reasonable.
"Fletch, Biff tells me you're screwing up in ways even I can't believe. Everywhere he goes on this Haybeck story, you've already been there. Screwing up, swimming bare-assed in the Haybeck's pool. So upsetting Haybeck's son, a monk, he refuses to see Biff. Angering another suspect so much that when Biff shows up, this thug throws a beer bottle in his face. Twice."
Fletch was grinning.
"It isn't funny. You know you weren't assigned to the Haybeck story. Ann McGarahan and I made that perfectly clear to you. There are easier ways to get fired." "No rookie should ever come anywhere near me," Biff said. "Especially no wise guy punk screw-up."
Frank smiled to himself.
"I thought you'd burn off your excess energy over the whorehouse story. Instead, last night I think I heard you say you can't do that story."
"I can do it."
"You said you needed more time on it. Maybe if you spent your time on the story assigned to you instead of bird-dogging Biff."
Through the window, Fletch saw Morton Rickmers talking to one of the policemen. Morton pointed toward Frank's office.
"Screw it." Biff made a move to get up. "This is a waste of time. Just can the son of a bitch and let me go back to work."
"Do you like bullies, Frank?" Fletch asked. "I don't like bullies." Frank forced a laugh.
"Biff's been with the News Tribune all his adult life. You've been with us, what, 3 months? He's the best crime reporter around. He's got a right to do his work without being bird-dogged by a screw-up kid."
"He's a bully," Fletch said. "I don't like bullies."
"You went after Biff because he's a bully?" Frank asked. "Like hell. You went after Biff because you thought you could beat him in his own story. Little you know."
"I have beaten him."
"Sure," said Biff. "You're ready to wrap up the story of the Haybeck murder like hell."
"Right," said Fletch. "I am." Frank was watching Fletch closely.
"I told you 2 days ago, Fletch, Monday, that we've had about enough of your crap around here. I thought if I gave you a real assignment, the Ben Franklin whorehouse story..."
"I've got that one about wrapped up, too." Fletch looked at the silent phone on Frank's desk.
"Sure," Biff said. "Tell us who killed Donald Haybeck, wise ass. We can hardly wait to hear it from your lips. A member of the family, I bet. Crazy Louise, no-brain Jasmine, daughter Nancy left her 5 kids in wet diapers and ran out and shot her paw. How about her husband, the two-bit poet? Or better yet, the monk, Robert. Tell us the monk murdered his old man. That'll sell newspapers."
The telephone on Frank's desk wasn't ringing. At that moment, Fletch would have appreciated some factual evidence. He took a deep breath. "Stuart Childers murdered Donald Haybeck." Biff laughed.
"Jeez! I'll bet you know that 'cause he confessed to you."
"Yeah," Fletch said, "he did." Biff laughed louder. "Gotta listen," Fletch said. "Sometimes liars tell the truth." Frank looked through his office windows at the city room.
"What are those cops doing out there?"
6 of them stood around Frank's secretary. "A criminal is a victim of his own crime," Fletch said to Biff, "as you'll come to understand, I think." The phone rang. Outside, the secretary was too busy with the police to answer it. Frank picked up the phone in annoyance.
"Hello, who is this?"
He glanced at Biff. Lieutenant Gomez? Yeah, Biff is here. No. Then Frank glanced at Fletch. You tell me the message, Lieutenant. The gun? Okay. 22 caliber pistol, registered to Stuart Childers. Biff looked up. Stuart Childers' fingerprints. Frank glared at Biff. Ballistics. It is the gun used to murder Donald Haybeck. Right, I'll tell him. Slowly, Frank hung up. Frank sat back in his chair, hands folded in his lap. He looked from Biff to Fletch and back to Biff. Biff sat erect, looking as alert as a rabbit. Outside the office, the hubbub made by the six policemen was rising noticeably. Clearly, two were arguing with each other. Each was pointing through the window at Fletch. The secretary, too, had raised her voice. Irritated, Frank asked, "What's going on out there?" "Okay." Biff straightened the crease in one trouser leg. "Gomez has been working closely with me on the Haybeck murder." He cleared his throat. "That call was for me." "You didn't even know he was calling," Frank said. Outside, Ham Starbuck had arrived. He stood between the police and the door to Frank's office. Fletch leaned forward in his chair. "Now, Frank, about the Ben Franklin story."
"Fuck off!"
Biff shouted. Frank raised his eyebrows. He said to Fletch, "Tell me." "The Ben Franklin Friend Service is owned by Wood Nymph Incorporated," Fletch said, "which is owned by two companies, Kungwell Screw and Lingman Toys." Frank, looking from Biff to the ruckus outside his office door to Fletch, nevertheless appeared to be listening. "Kungwell Screw and Lingman Toys are entirely owned by Peraska Steamship Company, which is owned entirely by four women, Yvonne Heller, Anita Gomez, Marietta Ramsen, and Aurora Wilson." The blood splotches disappeared against the color of Biff's face. Outside now, even Ham Starbuck was shouting. Frank looked at his telephone. He said, "Anita Gomez?" Then he looked at Biff. "Aurora Wilson?" Frank moved his chair closer to the desk. "Gomez and Wilson. I guess you two did work closely together." He reached for his phone. "And that's how the pictures of those whores got on my sports pages Monday morning." Biff exploded. "Son of a bitch!" "Matt," Frank said into the phone. "Frank Jaffe. Draw up a severance check for Biff Wilson. I want him out of here by 5 o'clock. "Fired? Yes, fired. Not another minute's protection does he or his enterprises get from the News Tribune." Biff jumped to his feet. His hands were fists. "You son of a bitch!" He took the few steps toward Fletch and swung. Fletch rolled off his chair, tipping it over onto the floor. The door opened. Ham Starbuck said, "I'm sorry, Frank, the cop. Something about Fletch." He looked at Fletch on the floor. "What are you, a rug fetishist?" Biff swung a kick at Fletch, but Fletch rolled away from it. The cops poured into Frank's office. Fat, slim, old, young, they were arguing with each other loudly. They were pointing fingers at each other and occasionally pointing fingers at Fletch on the floor.